Our next presenter is Mark Coleman from the University of Idaho, presenting biochar application to forest soils, a side benefit of mobile pyrolysis bioenergy production.
Thanks, Chris. Hi, I wanted to talk to you, introduce to you our idea about a carbon capture and storage system using the forest biomass. Rather than trying to incorporate biomass into the labile fraction and fighting the inevitable cycling of carbon, we're talking about adding direct carbon directly into the recalcitrant pool of carbon. So this is part of our idea. Oh, excuse me, I should back up and tell you about my co-authors. This work I'm doing with Deb Dumrose and a couple of graduate students, Kristen McElligott and Dan Smith, are working with us on this. Show you some data that Kristen has collected. So part of the idea is that we should be working within a sustainable bioenergy system where we have an abundant amount of biomass, an overabundant amount of biomass, which we're having problems with, wildfire hazards, et cetera. After harvests or even wildfire reduction operations, much of the material is either left on site or burned, and we consider that a waste of energy and potential problems with concentrating nutrients in piles. And one of the reasons this material isn't utilized is because the transportation costs exceed the mill prices. So what we'd like to think is that we could use a mobile fast pyrolysis system where we would take a conversion unit into the woods and process material in the woods through the pyrolysis process. From that, we would produce a syngas, which is used as process energy for the mobile fast pyrolysis unit, produce a bio-oil, which has some value in the marketplace. We can produce up to 100 gallons of biomass per dry ton of, or 100 gallons of bio oil per dry ton of biomass. You know, for instance, if we were working on an operation that yielded 10 to 20 dry tons, we might be able to profit or gains $1,000 to $2,000 per acre. But so there's some economic incentive there for using this, but our interest is in the biochar, which is about a quarter of the biomass, the quarter of the mass of the biomass that goes in. It's a solid product. It's equivalent to charcoal, so it's a component that's native to most forested ecosystems or any fire ecosystems. And so our approach is to take this material that we have available at these remote locations and distribute that onto these biomass removal sites. There's some concern that biomass removal also removes nutrients. And so one of the advantages of this is that this biochar contains most of the nutrients that are in the biochar or the biomass that was used to produce the biochar and the bio-oil. Plus, this material is recalcitrant. It has 1,000-year residence times in forest ecosystems. So, you know, this is just some data that we've done from an incubation study. I'll show you bits of this incubation study as we go through this talk. And where we mixed 50% biochar with soils, several different soil types, and you can see that it's effective at increasing the carbon concentration in each of the application approaches. We considered applying biochar to the surface, which is mostly the most likely approach of applying biochar in forest systems, although there are some systems that would also mix that in. And so we considered both of these, and you can see the carbon increased in both situations. So as I was mentioning, the nutrients removed from the site are contained in the biochar, and this is just some example of data that indicates that. So we'd like to avoid any potential productivity declines, especially on low-quality sites with removal of biomass. And so what we'd like to think is that we can extract the energy from this biomass and return the nutrients to the location. So nutrient concentrations of the chips that go into the pyrolysis process and the nutrient concentrations of the char that comes out of it. So I was quite surprised to see that nitrogen was actually higher in this material, but in fact, all of the nutrients are higher. But one thing you should remember is that this is a concentration of the nutrients, because we've reduced the mass of the material to 25%. So there is most likely some loss of nutrients from this process. But you should also notice that this is the concentrations in metric units is quite low. So this is, although a lot of people will talk about using biochar as a fertilizer, it's not a fertilizer. It contains the nutrients in the biomass, and it has some other interesting properties. For instance, biochar has some physical characteristics that are attractive, maybe not so attractive as if you're applying the biomass to the surface. It's a black surface, and so it may warm the soil. It may have some impact on freeze thaw effects. Also, if it comes from a fast pyrolysis system, it's a very fine material, and so it can work its way through the soil quite readily. If there's coarse fractions there, it might work its way through more easily. But it's a very porous material. So a gram of this material can have a surface area of 500 square meters, so substantial surface area, and we're all familiar with the use of carbon filters and that's really how they work. They have a large surface area. But addition of this material will, with a very low bulk density, will improve the soil bulk density itself. And so, for instance, we might be able to ameliorate skid rows or log landings with incorporating this material at those locations. There's a potential for increased water holding capacity with this material. This is just a moisture release curve that Kristen prepared, volumetric moisture content versus water potential. And you can see that the char has a much higher water holding capacity than the soil in the purple line. And if we mix char and soil together, there are some rates that we can improve the soil water holding capacity of that, but they tend to take quite high rates to see this in a field condition. We also have looked at some chemical properties. Increased pH is a consistent effect of biochar, although that depends on the pH of the biochar itself. So this is the incubation study that Kristen prepared, and you can see that there were some increases depending on the application rate or approach, incorporation approach. There are increases in potassium or cation exchange capacity in some of the application approaches. So the surface area should be adding cation exchange capacity, although that depends on the age of the char. The cation exchange capacity tends to age as it weathers, the cation exchange capacity tends to increase as it weathers over time. We have seen quite consistent increases in potassium, but we don't see any changes in other cations. And this may be a function of the feedstock. It's not entirely clear. And we also are somewhat puzzled by the decrease in the ammonium concentration in the incubated soils. It may be that there's low concentration in the char that we're putting in, but it also may be that there's changes in microbial nitrogen cycle. And so there are also important microbial changes. The the habitat for microbes is altered, and this is just a scanning electron microscope of a mycorrhizal fungi growing on the surface of a char particle, and you can imagine the habitat changes that might be occurring for that fungus and other bacterial species. There are reports of decreased nitrous oxide and methane in these systems. Methane absorption increases, nitrous oxide emissions decrease. The increase in pH may favor a shift towards bacteria or from ectomycorrhizae to endomycorrhizae, and some of these features may alter the soil aggregation. So we're interested in trying to understand these systems. We don't really want to advocate applying a biochar on a large scale unless we understand the impact. So we looked at some of the soil properties, and we're also looking at tree growth properties. I can't report to you the results of our field studies because they're ongoing and long-term in nature and have only just started. But I can show you some of the work that we've done with bioassays. I have a history of working with poplars and realize that they're very responsive. And so we use poplar trees in a greenhouse bioassay where we incorporate biochar into the growing media. And so this is just a simple total biomass from those systems where we've added zero char, 25% char, or 50% char, and it's grown with a coarse andisol, a pumice from the Umpqua National Forest, or a fine andisol, which is an ash cap from near Moscow, Idaho. And when we do this, we see very different responses in the trees. We see an increase with the fine andisol as char is incorporated in, and a decrease in tree growth with the coarse andisol. And of course, we're concerned that this may translate out into the forest, where we would see an impact on tree growth and a negative impact on tree growth. But we've also run a parallel study to this that includes incorporation of sand at 25% and 50%, and the patterns that we see in response are strikingly similar. So one of the conclusions that we might make from this is that this is just a filler effect of diluting the soil in that pot system, and so there isn't a significant chemical impact, but we still need to understand what's going on here and look at those data a little more carefully. Okay, in summary, I just wanted to talk to you about this system of carbon capture and storage using these forest systems and incorporating carbon directly into the recalcitrant pool. Biochar seems to have an ability to increase the soil carbon content, and soil properties are generally improved. We see tree growth responses to these physiochemical changes, but those can depend on the soil type. It may be this filler effect, and we need to look at those responses in the field, certainly. And these biochar amendments seem to be a viable approach to long-term carbon sequestration. So that's all I wanted to say.